720 WGN, Dane Neal in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. today. And just for those people that are thinking they're late to work, or that somehow they've time jumped, or maybe they had been they've been probed by aliens. It didn't happen. I accidentally read the 3 a.m. It was really only 2:30.
Well, you're getting a little ahead of yourself, but it's okay.
Yeah, I think even our guest, Blake Stubbs, calling us from Hollywood, he was on hold, ready to go at 2:30. He probably heard me say that and say, like, I missed the segment.
Well, it's all over. How are you going to go back to bed?
Not sure where the time went. but there it is. Yeah. Movies can cover anything. We've talked about, you know, love stories, you know, alien abductions.
Comedies,
sports, tragedies, you know. But when you can have a really good sports movie, you look at some of this list, and we'll run through some of the 25 greatest sports movies of all time. I am not going to say or even try to make a case for that they are all great movies, but granted, okay, they're on here. Maybe there's some unmemorable ones like Basketball, which was on the other day. And my kids were asking, like, oh, what is this they're playing? And I'm like, it's just nonsense. Just, you know, and you're too young to enjoy this brand of nonsense. But a guy who makes sense of the movie world, whether it's the current movies that are out there, even the sensitive ones, the disturbing ones, the scary ones, or we usually talk about the kind of big blockbusters and the action and exciting ones. It's Blake Stubbs calling us from Hollywood. Blake, welcome to WGN.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. And this is my opportunity, not to apologize, because it was, I think, a really cool moment, and a lot of the listeners here and everybody enjoyed it. But if people will remember, the last time we had you on, it was in an abbreviated way, as Jeremy Piven happened to be walking by and then banged on the glass and then came in, and we talked a little bit of he was going to throw out the pitch for the Cubs and being here in Chicago. And I think it was on the 4th of July. And so we missed out on some of the movies we were going to talk about. So I apologize.
Oh, not at all. I'm a big Jeremy Piven fan, so that was actually quite cool. I mean, you know, it's not every day you get to share some airwaves with, you know, an actor that you really admire and a body of work and a Chicago native, in his case. I mean, it's great that he comes back and has a great voice in the city and loves talking about, you know, the city, the sports teams. Just, you know, he hasn't forgotten where he came from.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that he could take part in the broadcast that day. Plus, it was a special day. I mean, 4th of July in Chicago. I mean, I was jealous I'm out here in California, but,
what?
You know, I love the Windy City. So I'm a big homer. You know, what can I say?
Well, we'll talk to you on Groundhog Day and see how jealous you are. Because, it was a nice day. But weather-wise, you probably made the right move. And I just had to do it because I know Jeremy Piven, he wouldn't apologize. He isn't the type to apologize for it.
Nah.
So that's me falling on the sword there. So it's always, I mean, I don't think the excitement really ever stops when you have your hand on the pulse of the movie world. And so they keep making more. It is like you don't call Hollywood and say, what's up? You guys got anything in the works? And they're like, yeah, we're working on things. There's always cool stuff on.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, this has been a pretty cool year. I mean, there have been some stuff that for me have been a little bit disappointing. And then I'm not the only one that shares that opinion of some of the bigger tentpole, you know, big films that are supposed to come out. But I'm one of those people that tries to look for the redeeming qualities, because people see these trailers, they see things that are coming out, and they make a decision. They want to go see a movie. And whether they listen to critics or they read Rotten Tomatoes constantly, they still may want to go see it. So I want to make sure that people are aware that they can look for some good things within movies that even, you know, I don't particularly like. But I do want to be honest and make sure that they know that if they want to ask me a question, they're going to get a good answer.
Well, Blake, and I think that's another industry in and of itself, is to create the attractive trailer, right? To make a trailer that makes people think, I got to go see that. Do you know, having done this and covered this for a number of years, and being just a huge movie fan in general, like when you watch the trailer, can you spot a trailer it looks great, but you know that there's nothing else there? Can you see those?
Yeah, you'll see those from time to time. I mean, actually, if you want to talk about trailers, two interesting examples this year. One was the first trailer that dropped for Ghostbusters, the remake of Ghostbusters. It was a panned trailer. It's one of the least liked, I think it may be the least liked trailer on YouTube in the history of trailers being on YouTube. And then conversely, you have, you know, Suicide Squad, which I thought had one of the best trailers. And I'm of the mind, and I know that, you know, Ghostbusters has been a pretty divisive film, but critically, you know, it's got a pretty fresh rating. And I know a lot of people, especially young women who have enjoyed this movie. I took my girlfriend to see it, and she had a ball, and she actually had never seen the original. So this was her first take on Ghostbusters, and she had a blast watching it. So I don't want to take anything away from people who have enjoyed Ghostbusters. I thought it was okay. I laughed. I had a good time. But then I, you know, just recently saw Suicide Squad, and that movie, I really want to sit down with director and writer David Ayer, who I'm a huge fan of, and I just want to ask him, at what point did this movie not become your movie anymore? Because if you've seen any of the other films he's made, End of Watch, Fury, look at the first three movies that he wrote, which I believe in order were he started with Fast and the Furious, and then he went into Training Day. I mean, the films that he has had a hand in from the writing standpoint, from the directing standpoint. Then you see Suicide Squad, and I can get into the things that I did like about Suicide Squad, but on the whole, the movie is the mess that you're probably hearing. It is.
From your friend, it's the Blake Stubbs quote. It's like, the mess that you've heard it is. It is.
The mess that you've heard it is. It is. And I you know, I can appreciate Will Smith's portrayal of Deadshot in this movie. I like what they did with his character. I like how redeemable they made parts of his character and his portrayal. I mean, Will Smith is still, he's got the clout, man. You put him in a movie, I'm in. And he made parts of it very much worth it. Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn. I actually was a huge fan of this. And then going back to, I believe I spoke about Batman versus Superman on your show. I am a big fan of the Ben Affleck Batman. We didn't get enough of that in Suicide Squad, but I feel like if we had any more, it would have become a Batman movie, and then we would have felt shortchanged. And, of course, the Jared Leto's Joker, you know, I mean, the trailers for this movie were excellent, you know, matching it up with Queen's music and all these other different takes on these hard rock songs, and the soundtrack is very eclectic. And in some cases, it misses, you know, like hitting the beats that it's matched up with in the film. I mean, that's sort of where it falls apart is in the structure of the movie. And I'm really curious as to what this movie was before they did a bunch of reshoots.
Well, see, this is kind of that double-edged sword. And we mm-hmm. talked about it kind of previewing having you on, and then some of the obvious built-in benefits or training wheels or crutches or, you know, just extra elements when you can tap into a film franchise or a topic that has a built-in fan base, you know, that may, you know, correct. So you know you're going to get a certain amount of people to show up to see Ghostbusters who love the original and it's all familiar. Yeah. And of course, Star Trek, wow, that's just a huge market there. But is it a double-edged sword where you have, like for Suicide Squad, where you have fans that you can potentially, you can fall really far short and disappoint them and then have a backlash that if this was an original movie, maybe you don't get as much people hating it publicly?
It really can be a double-edged sword. I mean, the case for Suicide Squad, for me, to simplify it, for anybody out there listening who isn't quite familiar with, aside from seeing trailers and being like, oh, that movie looks crazy, which it is. I mean, it has some real crazy elements that make it what it is. Imagine if the DC comic universe, because this movie takes place in the DC universe, Batman, Superman, all, you know, Wonder Woman, these characters, they took their iteration of what I would equate to Guardians of the Galaxy, which is what Marvel used. And yet, you know, that was a movie that starred Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana and Michael Rooker, you know, all these great actors. And that movie was a lot of fun. It was universally loved. People can't wait for Volume 2 to come out. DC's take on their sort of Guardians of the Galaxy type property in Suicide Squad, which is not exactly, you know, the A-listers. It's more secondary characters who have all been banded together to fight for, you know, truth, justice in the American way while they're technically still in prison under the American justice system. it kind of falls apart. But again, I think it's because this movie, the studio didn't have enough confidence in it, ordered up reshoots, wanted the movie to be funnier after all of the backlash Batman vs. Superman was getting for being too serious and dark and tonally just too much. You know, like, how do we take kids to see these movies? And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, this was going to be the tentpole movie, the big one that could probably answer the question of this identity crisis that the DC, you know, cinematic universe has been having. And it could answer it. It could give us, you know, a good launch pad forward into this is what their movies are going to be like. And it did not deliver. It did not answer that question.
You said, when did the director lose the movie? And in my mind, I'm sometimes you see a product on the market and you're like, this is ridiculous. In what boardroom did someone say, this is awesome, let's make millions of them? And in my mind, when you're saying that, I'm thinking of a studio executive picking up the phone. Maybe it's Ari Gold, and says, and
this
says
movie
like,
stinks.
This, I saw the trailer. I want it funnier. That just do it. Click. You know, like insert a joke. I mean, and then like I wanted to ask you because this, you had a lot of time here, and then you looked at the Batman versus Superman and all the ways that they should be trying to and should be able to kind of replicate that success that Marvel has had, especially with Guardians of the Galaxy, where those are, you know, complete peripheral figures that did not have an identity in the common landscape until that movie came out. And they come through here knowing what they need to accomplish, knowing maybe, hey, don't build everything into it like you did with Batman versus Superman. And then they still seem to fall short, and you just wonder why.
Yeah, I don't know if it was if there was some egos, there was some clashing. There was, I mean, you know, I've worked at theater for most of my adult life, and you can sometimes have egos clash, and then the product suffers. And the same thing could be said for the cinematic universe. You know, when you're making movies, I mean, when somebody puts a ton of money in on something, and I've talked with directors of films who their film didn't entirely get away from them, but they've had, you know, clashes with producers, clashes with the studio, and they say, look, you got to make the movie more marketable to somebody. And the director, who may also be the writer and have a stake in the film, they sit there and say, no, I'm making my movie, and my movie is going to be my movie. I don't necessarily know that David Ayer, who, if you watch his films, his movies, very much his movie. By the time the credits rolled on this one, I was like, that's not a David Ayer movie. I don't. You just put that up on the screen and told me that David Ayer wrote and directed this. I imagine he did parts of this, and I know he directed like all these scenes, and I know he directed these actors. Some of these actors love working with him, but the end product, like when this at some point I believe left his hands and went into an editing room with producers and somebody else, and they turned out a movie that is not the David Ayer experience we were supposed to get. So the movie gets jumbled. It loses some of its luster in places. It just kind of like. I'm not saying I was sitting there hoping it would end because, I mean, I love comic book movies just as a human being. I love going and being entertained with spectacle and big characters and cool costumes and action and all that. But the movie just, it felt so, schizophrenic is almost the way to phrase it. And maybe that's what they were going for with Suicide Squad and this, you know, crazy macabre of characters or whatever. But it just, I don't know. And then I, you know, the big thing they were hyping up was Jared Leto's Joker. I honestly sitting here and I'm picking it apart in my brain, you know, every little element of what I saw as opposed to what I was supposed to see maybe 6 months ago. And I don't know that he had to be in this movie. I mean, there may be a few arguments people can make and say, no, he had to be the backstory for Harley Quinn and all that. And I'm like, well, maybe, but just show it. Like, we don't have to make him a full-on character. We should get him in a whole other movie, you know, a whole other experience where we dedicate the whole thing to this crazy portrayal of the Joker that has got so much press, you know, leading up to this film's release.
I had just heard some things where that character wasn't even in the movie that long.
No, he's not. I mean, Batman's in it less, but he's in it. You're talking, think Silence of the Lambs, Anthony Hopkins is Hannibal Lecter. Everybody knows Hannibal Lecter's in the movie, but when you watch it, I think he's got like 16 minutes of screen time and he won Best Actor. It's about that much screen time. It's not much compared to the entirety of the film. And so by the end, and he's not even like the essential villain, which, by the way, if I spoiled something right there by saying that, I'm sorry, but the trailers have lied to you, America, and you need to know that before you go in.
Well, here's the thing.
You know,
and when we come back from the break and we're talking with direct and live from Hollywood, Blake Stubbs on movies, we'll talk about some of those, you know, as a director has maybe because it's their name on it. You know, it's not like the 18th producer down that's going to have to take the hit for this. And at some point, maybe you with the word on the street will hear some kind of cracks in where you'll hear him come out and say, well, you know, that's not what I intended or that's not what I was hoping to see. And or things got changed. You never know what's going to happen. With that. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk more with Blake Stubbs about some of the other movies out there, including Star Trek. So stay tuned for that. And people are excited about that version of it. And then the greatest sports movies of all time. And we'll get his thoughts as well. It's staying in for Nick on 720 WGN.
What are you going to call?
You're going to call Blake Stubbs.
That's right.
The Guardians of the Galaxy is a guardian of the cinematic universe here, kind of giving us some insight onto the things to see, things to avoid, and how to kind of traverse that cinematic and movie landscape. Blake, welcome back to WGN.
Thanks for having me once again, guys. Pleasure.
The So before we like end up on the whole kind of Marvel superhero movie stuff that we're doing, you mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy. They're filming the next one. Is there any,
yes,
is there any kind of insight into like the setting? Like, cause they kind of had a trailer where they blew up the one guy, and then there's the big Thanos.
Yeah.
Is going to be, they're going to, I guess, battle him, and there's a love story, and Star-Lord has been kind of solidified. And then the timing, when is it coming out?
Well, the big thing that I've been trying to keep my, you know, they're looking at a 2017 release date, probably in May. I think it's May 5th. Yeah, May 5th. I just want to make sure I was giving you the right date. As of right now, that's the date it's going to get released. The big thing that they just talked about, because San Diego Comic-Con just happened, and so that's where a lot of these comic book movies make their big announcements, you know, their big casting choices. They unveil the big name actors that are coming into play these parts that, you know, we fellow nerds are so excited for them to finally put on a big screen. And for Guardians, the big thing that they mentioned was that there will be no Infinity Stones in this particular film. Now, if you've seen the first volume, the big thing that they're chasing is this one Infinity Stone. And in the grander scheme of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, when you, I believe, when you get all the stones together in a gauntlet, you can rule the galaxy, world, the universe, the whole deal. And that's what Thanos is trying to get. So Thanos is going to show up, I believe, in a Avengers sequel. I believe in Infinity War, the Avengers Infinity War run. So this movie is going to be much more contained. That's what James Gunn, who's writing and directing it, has said. This is going to be sort of a continuation and an unraveling mystery behind Peter Quill, which is Star-Lord, also known as, you know, played by Chris Pratt. Kurt Russell is going to be playing his father in the film. And, you know, as somebody who sat in the Music Box Theater in Chicago, I believe it was in December, and watched the 70mm production of The Hateful Eight, man, could I not get over how much of a true movie star Kurt Russell is. Now, there's a thing about being an actor in Hollywood. There's a thing about being a star of a movie, and that's great and everything. But there are few still living true movie stars, in my opinion. You can put Arnold Schwarzenegger and Stallone in a movie, and we all get excited because they're doing things. Kurt Russell only shows up in things every once in a while. And the power that he brings to the screen, the presence, it's just like it's hard to rival. He's the only guy I want to look at because he's always doing stuff, and he's such a tough guy. And, you know, I mean, there's movies that he's made that, like, even Captain Ron, which is kind of a mess of a movie. You know, Kurt Russell is hilarious in that movie because for once he got to just cut loose and do comedy and not really, you know, be held back by any kind of, you know, preconceived notion of how he was going to play a part. But then, you know, for me, the big movie for him is The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. What a killer scary movie!
Oh yeah,
what a bad dude he was in that. You know, I mean,
you just made me think because when you first said The Thing, I'm thinking the Fantastic Four rock guy, but I know that's not what you talked about. Yeah, the Thing was, you know, the aliens came through and it was in the
were somewhere in a land,
in the Arctic. Yeah.
He does have a lot because then of course he's Snake Plissken, and then he was the maintenance guy when Goldie Hawn lost her memory.
In Overboard.
Correct. In Overboard. And then you know, like Quentin Tarantino, who has this knack for, I don't even want to say resurrecting careers, but just giving certain, you know, stars or movie stars or actors like the parts they may have been born to play. You know, I argue about this movie with people all the time, and I love arguing about it. It's fun. I don't mean that in like a contentious way, just in a, you know, they're movies. They're meant to be discussed, in my opinion. The movie Death Proof that Tarantino made where Kurt Russell played stuntman Mike, the villain. What a great villainous portrayal by a guy who has predominantly played good guys in everything he's ever done. You know, it was kind of like, for me, it was equatable to like when Henry Fonda played the bad guy in Once Upon a Time in the West. You know, the perennial good guy, the guy who's always the hero, is going to be the baddest dude you've ever seen, complete evil, and you can't wait to see what happens to him at the end. Kurt Russell, man, he just brings it every time he's on screen. Every time I see him in something. So the fact he's going to be playing the character of Ego, who is Peter Quill's father in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I can't wait to see him and Chris Pratt sort of square off and verbal sparring because the charisma levels are just going to make people's heads explode and their popcorn fly all over the theater. I think it's going to be great.
The one role I enjoyed him in a lot was in the movie Miracle when he played Herb Brooks as the hockey coach.
Yes. And actually, there are movies, I'm glad you brought that up, because there are movies where actors like Kurt Russell, who people look at as movie stars. Again, that's sort of there's a differentiation for me. Some people are just movie stars. You know, they bring a lot of presence, and they're just there, and they sell tickets. and some of them are also actors. And that particular movie, his portrayal of Herb Brooks, I think, shows you what kind of a true actor Kurt Russell is, and he's a damn good one when he really wants to be. You know, and something that he isn't a big blockbuster, isn't an over-the-top action movie. That is a very intimate portrayal of a guy who's turning a group of players who are not supposed to do very well into the greatest, most inspirational story in sports history.
And a little bit later in our time with you, we're going to talk about movies like that. It is certainly on the list on some of the great sports movies of all time. And it also ties into the whole Olympic thing that's going on as well.
Yes.
But now, this is an interesting thought, because Kurt Russell is one of those tweener guys from a movie star perspective. Absolutely. You know, yes. And you've got guys like, I think you've like Robert Redford or Vince. I mean, every movie that Vince Vaughn, every movie they're in, they're just that guy. You know, they're just that guy doing this or that guy doing that. But Kurt Russell, when you look at the kind of the range of work, yes, a movie star, but he has that ability to blend and become those characters. Do you think because he really does have a really good funny side, has kind of limited whatever kind of, I guess, consideration for Oscars or some of those awards that he might have gotten otherwise?
I think it might have. I think it's also just one of those deals where when you look at the way that, you know, acting Oscars are handed out, the roles that he's taken and where they've fallen, maybe it has to do with when they've been released, you know, times of year. Maybe it's because of the fact that they at times didn't even go for consideration. Maybe it's just because, I mean, I hate to say it, maybe there were better performances that year. I mean, I'd have to do like a real diagnostic breakdown of like what movies were released the years he did all those movies. And you know what's funny is I could probably do that in an afternoon and then tell you, like, look, here's why he didn't win an Oscar for this. And for me, I mean, I would just say that he's one of those guys that has never managed to, I think, pick or play a part that is just terrible. And I think that he has always been very fortunate because, again, he's a child actor. I mean, he started very young. I mean, I remember the first thing I ever saw him in from when he was very young was like an episode of Gilligan's Island. Like, he was on stuff way back when as a kid and grew up in Hollywood in what I would call the end of the classic Hollywood era, and then sort of helped usher in an entire new wave of stuff in the 70s and 80s up through the 90s. And then now we get treated to him in these, you know, great veteran, you know, they require a veteran presence of an actor to be in those roles in films like Hateful Eight, you know, or Death Proof. Because I don't know, like he's one of those guys where I would love to just sit and pick his brain and have a conversation about, you know, what led to you being in this particular film? Like for me, Captain Ron's the one I have a question about. I just have a question about that particular film. But I remember seeing that when I was younger and thinking, wow, this guy's really funny. And then of course, growing up, you know, I went through my Snake Plissken phase and I went through The Thing. I went, you know, like all these movies, I'm like, man, this guy's done it all. Like he's had, could ask anybody who wants to be an actor, if there's a career you could mimic and they don't tell you Kurt Russell, they better have a really good, you know, backup option, because he's really done just about everything you could want.
We want to let the listeners know that we're talking with Blake Stubbs live from Hollywood, talking movies, talking a little Kurt Russell, and of course 312-981-7200. You can text in your favorite sports related movie or thoughts on any of the stuff or questions you may have for Blake as well. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about the Ghostbusters movie, his thoughts on that kind of new version of it, and how it is kind of I think overcoming maybe the negative hype from the trailer. We'll talk a little Star Trek. And then later on, stay tuned, because we are going to talk the greatest sports movies of all time. Some of the ones that have come in is Hoosiers, The Miracle.
Yes.
There are some thoughts, too, that, you know, on the Oscars and the awards, 773, Russell was robbed of Oscar in Big Trouble in Little China. And I have to agree.
Whoever sent that, we need to get a beer next time in the Windy City. We have plenty to discuss. Yes.
Was he up for one in Tango and Cash?
I don't believe so, but I'll check for you.
It was an entertaining movie. I know that.
The tequila sunrise scene, I think, was. /7:20 WGN. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio, in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. We've got Elif in the booth playing the bumper music. Great music so far. Dino Tiberi to my right. We're going to be breaking down the top sports movies of all time in just a little bit. Want to touch on some of the things that the the callers have brought up, and so many different movies you've got on the sports side, and you can add yours as well, either text or by phone, 312-981-7200, you know, Moneyball, Field of Dreams, Mighty Ducks 2. I mean, so you're seeing a range here from, I think, what people would say would be, you know, ambitious quality cinematic efforts to stuff with Disney characters.
Right.
Major League 61, Slapshot, Rookie of the Year, a couple for Rudy. But here's the, and then people are adding in their Kurt Russell love too. People love him just like you do, Blake. You know, with Tombstone, you'd mentioned your Snake Plissken phase as you got out of that when you finally took the eye patch off, which I think was good. But a caller from the 708.
It was a big step.
like one day you came down for breakfast and your mom says, "Blake, where's your patch?" He's like, "I think I'm done with my Snake Plissken days."
They said, "I'm ready to move forward, Mom. You know, and focus on college."
A caller wants to get your thoughts on, and I wanted to get it as well because you're so in tune with this stuff. Is Captain America: Civil War? It was another one of the Captain America things, but they could have taken Captain America off, slapped an Avenger logo on it. They were all in it and made it an Avenger movie. What did you think about it?
I had a lot of fun watching the movie. I agree that you could have made it Avengers Civil War, and it would have been fine. But I like that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has hit a stage where they can make as many movies and release them within a year as they want. And even the ones that have made them money, for example, you know, if you look at the scale of the first Captain America film, which was not small, but it wasn't nearly what this one was. And then you look at the second one, the one in between, it grows every time they make a Captain America film. And that is a showing that they back the franchise. And as far as keeping all these extra characters in, I mean, for one, I'm glad we got to see Paul Rudd, you know, Ant-Man, play with the big boys. I'm glad we got to see, you know, this new Spider-Man, which in the end, like some people I remember talking when I was leaving the theater, they're like, you know, they could have just saved Spider-Man. They didn't really have to use him in this movie. I feel like they just kind of baited us into seeing a Spider-Man for the first time. And what I remember, I think I talked about on your show, it was really important that whatever happened in those meetings between Disney, Marvel, and Sony, because Sony owns all of the Spider-Man cinematic rights, they were able to finally get Spider-Man to cross over and join in with this big, overarching, all-encompassing, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe. And that's a big deal. And I couldn't have been happier with what I saw in the theater then. And I mean, you know, if I sat down and watched the movie again, like at home, I'd probably nitpick it and be like, oh, this is, you know, too much, and they could have trimmed the fat here. And, you know, but that's the mind of an editor talking. But as a pure, you know, fan who went to enjoy a movie, I don't think I could have asked for more. I think they gave me more. It's like going to a buffet and they have all your favorite food and you just ate too much and you wish you could take a doggy bag home with you, but for some reason this restaurant breaks all the rules and doesn't like to do that because they want you to wait for the next big thing that they're going to release.
Yeah.
So I think that I loved it. I couldn't have had a better time in the theater this year than seeing that movie.
One of the things that they do, and especially with that Spider-Man character, and all of them, right? You know, but they have, they take this totally fresh look at it. So it is still the character that you know and love, sort of, right? You recognize him, sort of, and you're a fan of this new version, but it's out of left field. You know, they bring it in, because like, you know, I don't think we're, you know, spoiler alerting, but the Spider-Man character is like, it's like a kid. You know, and here's how they do this too, is they seamlessly blend all of these characters that are in specific kind of time eras, and it doesn't matter. Right. You know, they're able to make it where it just works.
Right. And the big thing too, at least with the Spider-Man, because he's probably the best case because now we're on the third iteration of the character in a cinematic realm. And Batman, conversely, on the DC side is now entering his third. Every time, because some people get mad that they're making different, you know, oh, they're making another Spider-Man movie. To me, it's much like if you actually read comics and you have one character that you love oh so much or a group of characters like, say, X-Men, I always ask people this. Do you know how many writers have had a hand in creating an entire run or series of, say, Spider-Man or X-Men or Batman? It's just like when a different writer takes on the book and they're going to have a run for a year and give you 12 issues or however many issues their run lasts. You either love it or you hate it and you move on to the next writer. what they're doing in the cinematic universe, and now they're just sort of trying to make sure that, well, we had this great run of, you know, films with Tobey Maguire, and while the third movie was a mess, and I don't blame Sam Raimi for that one, who directed it, I do feel like that movie, they kind of got away from themselves big time. I know there's a lot of people out there who probably agree with me. The movie just doesn't hold up compared to the other two. Then you have the Andrew Garfield run of films, which I enjoyed. I thought they were fun, but they didn't leave a big lasting impression, like, say, the first time I saw Robert Downey Jr. play Tony Stark.
Right.
You know, now you jump into this Captain America Civil War, and we meet this, you know, this young kid playing Peter Parker, who really looks like a young kid and really looks like a Peter Parker. And what glimpses we got of him, I was so excited. I couldn't wait to finally see a Spider-Man that I think I will completely click with the moment we see him get his own movie in Spider-Man Homecoming, which is coming out, I think, this next year.
It's all very cool. And the thing that they have done on the Marvel side, when you go to break it down, even if you're taking notes at home or you have a clipboard, is it all kind of meshes together. And this guy matches yes. into this. And then the storylines all mesh and the movies are kind of, you know, blended in some ways. And there's never really a disconnect. It always kind of checks out
Correct.
When you do the math on the Marvel movies. And so let's get into Star Trek. This was a movie where you had to suspend a little bit of that because I watched it. And there
right.
were so many things that made absolutely no sense. But in the end, I think Star Trek fans, I've heard a lot of great feedback that they love it. And it was yes. a lot of fun. I mean, you couldn't like look too much, you know, at everything that was going on and have it check out. But it was a blast.
The thing about this particular Star Trek, and I remember after the first trailer, and a lot of my friends were big Trek fans, and I have to openly admit, I'm a Star Wars geek, I respect Trek, but I'm not a huge Trek guy. So there's a lot that I don't know about, you know, the old series. I couldn't tell you a thing about TNG other than I love Patrick Stewart and Jean-Luc Picard. And, you know, like there are little things. Like I have had susceptibility to being around it and watched episodes of things, but I'm just not totally like in that universe of fandom. So when I go to see the movies, I'm only looking to really just be entertained. You know, like, does this tell a point A to point B story? And Star Trek Beyond, which, you know, it definitely is a departure from these first two films that we had where J.J. Abrams was at the helm. This is more of like an episodic entry into what could be an entire franchise of films. And they're more like taking it week to week like they used to on the series. You know, or maybe they would have like a two-parter, or maybe they would have like three episodes run and they're all part of one big story. But for the most part, you just got a new entry in the ship's log with the crew every week. That's what this particular film was like. And I think that's a big reason why it worked, because we already had two films that established who these characters were. And we changed directors, Justin Lin, who is responsible for some great, I mean, he does not make bad movies. Justin Lin does not make bad movies. I'm still waiting for him to make his truly great opus, although I did love Better Luck Tomorrow. The big thing, though, is that, like, you know, if you know the Fast and Furious films, all the coolest stuff from the Fast and Furious films, that's Justin Lin. He stepped into this, and I think he hit the ground running. I mean, I can't wait to see another iteration of this Star Trek crew from this director, because I think, like you said, you had a lot of fun, and you were completely entertained throughout. And despite the tragic loss of Anton Yelchin, who plays Chekhov, you know, he tragically passed away right before the film's release. I'm curious to see what they end up doing with that. But, you know, that's just totally tragic, because he's a hell of a talent, and I've been a big fan of his work for a very long time. But as far as Star Trek Beyond goes, yeah, I mean, this was a winner. If you have yet to see it and it's still playing in your area, get out there and take a look. Go on a Saturday and just kick back, relax, get some popcorn, and you're going to love it. It was probably one of the better popcorn fair movies of the year, I thought.
But so you were able to sit there and enjoy it because there was some great banter. The characters yeah. were funny. But there were so many things about it that just made – that just didn't, I don't want to say it didn't make any sense. It was just crazy.
Tie it together, yeah.
Right. Where like,
it's kooky. Yeah.
Where
yeah.
Because they land, and of course, nobody needs a coat, right? Or any oxygen.
No, yeah.
You know, and then they bring in like
the oxygen's cool here, you know.
There's not even a question to like, hey, we're on a faraway planet. Maybe we should like, even yeah. like, let's test the atmosphere. No, it's great. Amazingly, right. It works. So they did that, and then the one alien, everybody just kind of, you know, blended in some fun and interesting and unbelievable ways, and then they brought in the Beastie yeah. Boys, and
the, right, which,
the
which
aliens
kind of
were stopped by
to that first Star Trek film they made, you know, in the 2000 theater. Like, yeah, I felt like this was sort of a, hey guys, we're going to go this direction with this franchise now, and we want you to have fun when you come see these movies. And so there's going to be more humor infused, and we're not going to go full Tribble, but we're definitely going to have, you know, some tongue in cheek moments and great rapport between the characters, because these people have been together for 3 years flying through space. I mean, that's where this movie picks up, is that they're at like the third year of the 5 year voyage.
Full Tribble, huh? Like, Blake, is that the space equivalent of jumping the shark?
I don't want to say that because they're, you know, they've sort of taken on a life of their own in pop culture, but it's just, for me, that's always been one of the weirdest elements of Star Trek. Like, wait, Tribbles? Wait, what? Like, that's a thing? And then, you know, you watch the episode and you're like, okay, that's kind of kooky. That's kind of weird. Didn't totally make sense, but it was a fun thing. You know, I mean, I feel like Star Trek should keep on this particular path in the cinematic world because it makes for very interesting, fun films that people can go see, and then it gets back to being an event film. I mean, after the whole Khan fiasco of the last film, where it's like he's not Khan, and then he ends up being Khan. You know, like people were kind of miffed. People were not weak, and I think they kind of took note, and they were like, "Nah, man, like Star Trek should be fun. We should be getting this out to new audiences. We should make, you know, young kids and younger people really have fun watching these movies." So they've added more humor, and they've let these characters, you know, these actors who have played now, this is their third film working together, for the undeniable chemistry that some of these actors have together, they let them all have moments. And I actually just had a ball watching it, because, I mean, in the end, I just wanted to have fun watching it, and I got more than I bargained for.
Movies,
I went to see this.
Movies should be fun, and occasionally movies that are fun or inspirational or at least some kind of a where you get some kind of benefit out of it. You feel like, hey, this was great.
Yeah.
I saw this. I was moved. I was inspired. I was entertained. And sometimes it's sports related. Sometimes even Olympic related. And we've had some great callers and texters who have added their thoughts. You know, Field of Dreams, the hockey movie Miracle. Of course, Hoosiers is one of those. Concussion Rich. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who that is, but do you remember that one?
Concussion Rich.
Which one?
Oh, it's probably Rich. Rich is the name of the texter, and the movie is Concussion.
Concussion, right? With
Concussion.
Will Smith.
Yeah, that was a pretty deep movie with a very focused approach to telling some hard stories.
Well,
tough story.
Hold that thought, Blake, because we're going to get into that. 312-981-7200. People can text and call in with their selections on favorite sports related movies. We've got Blake Stubbs on the line. We're going to take a quick break. It's Dane in for Nick DiGilio until 5 on 720 WGN. WGN, Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase studio in for Nick DiGilio, who usually is up on the seventh floor. And, you know, we've done shows up there on the seventh floor.
That's a nice studio up there, too.
Oh, it's very nice. It's kind of super peaceful here. It's good. You can see out, especially on a nice summer night with our bullet-resistant glass. Or if there's, you know, they film movies here, right? You know, where there's car crashes and things.
Sure.
I think it's happened. I think a car has jumped the curb and run into things here. Not here exactly. I think it did happen.
Maybe.
Or close.
What movie would that have been?
Transformers or something. I'm not sure. Yeah. Anyway. On the line with us, we got direct from Hollywood, the one and only Hollywood Blake, Blockbuster Stubbs. And Blake, for the listeners who want to keep up with all of your stuff, they can follow you on Facebook. They can follow you on Twitter, correct?
Yes. At Blake Stubbs on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. I tweet whenever I'm watching something. I try to do a little live tweet. So if you're watching what I'm watching, then we should start DMing or mentioning each other and get a conversation going. Because, you know, when I watch stuff, I want to talk about it. As you can tell, if you've been listening to me for the last about an hour on the show.
Well, the listeners totally agree as well. So the 708, The Longest Yard, someone had suggested, mm-hmm. from 773, Remember the Titans. Of course, yep. Field and yep. Dreams, Jay from Ohio, The Signal. Getting out to Ohio there for Field of Dreams, another great movie. So let's talk about sports movies, and let's talk about maybe some Olympic movies. Do you have a handful or maybe three or four favorite ones we can kind of, you know, at least mention and talk about?
Well, we've already mentioned Miracle, and I think that Miracle, as far as a narrative sort of drama about one of the greatest, most inspirational, you know, moments in sports history that, you know, anybody who watched it live can still remember when it happened. And then anybody like me who was born after it happened, once we've heard about it, and if we're lovers of hockey, like myself, You're going to be hard pressed to argue that there's a more inspirational moment in sports than the Miracle on Ice when it happened.
You know, the ironic part about that, Blake, was that that was tape delayed, the movie, the actual game itself.
It
wasn't live back then. It was tape delayed. It was like 2 hours after the game had ended. Now, if that happened with social media, you know, you'd already have the results. Everybody would have been all over that. But back then, in 1980, that wasn't the case. So just an interesting sidebar to that particular movie there.
Somewhere, and maybe I'm incorrect, and call me out on this if I am, but wasn't Al Michaels, didn't they actually have to, like, have him go back and re-record certain things that were said, like, during the final plays of the game because something got lost or he wasn't? I don't quite remember, and it was because of that tape delay. Like, there was something that got messed up, so he had to re-record something or... Maybe I'm off on that, but I just remember the broadcast was, you know, so electric and crazy when it aired because it took the world by storm. But like you said, it was tape delayed, and a lot of people, you know, just within the arena only knew what happened.
Right, and that was the ironic part about it. But
they were busy writing postcards to their relatives 3 hours later. Everyone knew.
Yeah, right. But I think there is some merit to that. I think there were a few things they had to reshoot in that, you know, as far as the his voice. He was on with the former Canadian Ken Dryden. They did the broadcast that for that game, and I think there were some parts where he had to probably go back and do some voice work on that.
Absolutely. Miracle, the you know, the Disney film that showcases that, you know, mentioning Kurt Russell earlier and everything, I just had to mention, I'm glad you brought up Herb Brooks, because that portrayal of Herb Brooks was, I mean, I didn't know the man, obviously, but it seemed very spot on. You know, there was a lot of gravitas in that performance, and the way that man motivated those players and got those players to that level of excellence that, you know, changed their lives and changed the way, you know, people watch the Olympics and what the Olympics are really all about. You know, I mean, the Red Army team, man, they were unbelievable.
Yeah.
And to have shut them down like that, and what wasn't even the gold medal game, you know, that wasn't even like the game of games, like that, you know, that game just sort of gets overshadowed. That Olympics was all about the Red Army team getting beat.
And it
was incredible.
Yeah, there were a couple of things in there about the movie. One, Herb Brooks passed away right before the movie was released. And he was on set as a consultant the whole time, you know, when they were making the movie. And the other part about Herb Brooks was that the fact that he was on the 60 Olympic team. And then there was a scene in the movie where they were going to bring in one of the players to possibly take one of the spots of the existing team, and that's what happened to Herb Brooks. He got taken off of the 60 Olympic team, you know, back
right before
that
time,
before they won the gold medal in Squaw Valley. So, yeah, that was I really enjoyed that movie a lot. I've watched documentaries about that team. You know, HBO had something on them, and you know, it was an inspirational. The whole thing with the game itself, and then the movie, and Kurt Russell, it was awesome in that movie.
Yeah, guys,
one
of
the big things.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say about that particular movie too, and like you said, you watched it. I think it has a lot of rewatchability. You know, you can, if you watched it when it came out, you can show it to kids, and they're going to enjoy it, and kind of know a little bit about history after that. Hopefully, they'll go on and read more about it and everything. But the movie, I mean, I revisited it probably two or three times since I bought it years ago. And I had never seen it up until I just bought it on a whim. You know, somebody's like, dude, you got to watch this. And for some reason, it just slipped through the cracks. So once I finally watched it, I mean, I think it's a very excellent film produced that kind of goes under the radar in terms of, you know, quality movies Disney has helped produce that aren't animated. You know what I mean? Like, everybody thinks Disney, they think family, they think animated. They've done some solid stuff, and Miracle is one of those things.
One of the cool things about it, too, is that it really does kind of showcase the importance of some of those Olympic moments. I don't know, as the world gets smaller and with social media and all the other things that are going on in the world now, if the Olympics will ever have moments that mean that much, that are on like an international political basis, because it was huge,
right?
You know, all over the, as opposed to like these, you know, individual great stories. And I think we'll always see those kind of things happening at the Olympics, but it was big. And to have a movie that kind of frames up that whole thing and brings into it all of the,
right,
you know, what it really meant, what it meant to everybody involved, I think was really cool. We've got like two more minutes left, Blake. Do you have another like sports related movie or an Olympic related movie or something related to sports and movies you want to share?
Well, I would definitely be remiss if I didn't mention Chariots of Fire, because the Vangelis score, you know, once you hear it, you never forget it. And then the other big thing, I mean, if we're going to talk sports movies, greatest of all time, I mean, I hem and I haw and I go back and forth, but I always end up just saying Slapshot's the best. Slapshot is just so fun. It's so it's Animal House on ice. You know, if you ever seen Animal House, you haven't seen Slapshot. But here's the thing that separates Slapshot from the rest. Paul Newman is carrying the movie, and he loved playing that part. Yeah. It's one of his favorite roles he ever had. And, you know, there's another big movie star who just brought presence and brought talent to every role he played. And that was one that he was very passionate about and had a blast making. So, and it shows in the movie.
Yeah, the aging veteran.
Can't go without mentioning this. So, but, I mean, you can go on and list Bull Durham, A League of Their Own, Raging Bull. You know, there's sports movies that we could do a whole show just about sports movies. But for the most part, those are probably the big ones. And mentioning the Olympics, I would say Miracle and Chariots of Fire are probably the top two for me. Cool Runnings, you know, my generation grew up with Cool Runnings, John Candy. Can't forget that one. So, yeah, I mean, there's quite a few that have been made that are a lot of fun to watch. And then I highly recommend people check out Red Army, the documentary by Gabe Polsky, who's a Chicago native, about the Red Army team. And look into how he made that movie, because he got access to things that I thought nobody could ever get access to. And the film is excellent, and it showcases how tough it was to be a part of that Red Army.
And so. I saw the, like, a, and it was probably the same documentary where they showed how they built that team, mm-hmm. the thought process,
yes.
you know, from the Russian side, like how they were going to go ahead and put that together, and how the coach had never played hockey before. He kind of right. imagined and invented an entirely new way to play the game, which kind of set the world, yep. You know, back as far as trying to yep. be able to compete with it.
But it's definitely one of those lesser known films that for a while there, you know, basically because of the fact that a Chicago native helped produce it. I know that it got a lot of good play in the Chicago area, but for those out there that may have not had a chance to see it, you can get a hold of it now. I think Amazon's got it. You can get a hold of it and watch it.
Cool.
But don't miss that one. It's very interesting and very much in depth on what it was like to be a part of that, I guess, dynasty of teams, you know, in the Olympic arena. So, but yeah, there's tons of movies that, you know, there's the ones that make you cry, like Field of Dreams. There's the ones that make you feel like Rocky, which also kind of makes you cry at the same time. Rudy, which, you know, everybody, you know, I mean, so many movies that make people cry, and they're all uplifting, and you know, they have great messages.
Sports movies, it really does. You have that whole, you know, the Chariots of Fire and the soundtrack and all of that, and they got Cool Runnings. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, you know, I don't think the soundtrack won anything from Cool Runnings.
No,
but you're winning our award, and of course the listeners as well, for favorite movie contributor, kind of breaking down all the action that's happening in Hollywood. So before we go to our break and let you go, just really quick, give out the Twitter and the Facebook one more time, Blake.
Yeah, look me up, Blake Stubbs, on Facebook, and find me at Blake Stubbs on Twitter. And let's talk movies, Netflix shows, the whole deal. And if you're not watching Stranger Things, you should. That's my last little plug thing. You should be on the lookout for.
All right, thanks, Blake.
Thank you, guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Blake Stubbs, Hollywood movie guy, a little tiny bit late for news. We're going to take a quick break first. It's Dane and for Nick on 720 WGN.